When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Brighton Rock Podcast, the podcast about the beautiful club within the beautiful game. With me, Russell Guyver, my co-host Peter Marsh, and a welcome return to one of our lovely sponsors. It is the gent known to some as Raymond Wright, but known to us just as the gent. Hello, Raymond. Hello, Peter.
Hello.
Good to have you both with us on this episode, which is going to be multifaceted, but hopefully not too long, like some of the recent episodes. And what we're going to do in part one is further reflections on the weekend's semi-final. Part two is about the Forest game, where unfortunately we did lose 3-1. We'll get into that in loads of detail, or brackets, not much detail at all, according to what Peter wants to talk about, which is not much, close brackets. And the third part is just any other business and a summary of what's going on with the football world, including Worthing getting into the playoffs. More on all of that stuff later on. So first of all, then, further reflections on the weekend. We did the match day special at Box Park. It was predominantly about the match experience, well, actually the match day experience. Spoke to quite a few people. Peter, you were on it, obviously, pre-match. Raymond wasn't on it, actually, I don't think. I don't think we got you on there on the audio. But you were there pre- and post-match at the Box Park. And, of course, we were all at the game, as were 36,200, I think, of us all together. I'm not going to get 32,600 on the podcast. That might be a bit too long-winded. But I am going to get your views on this, folks. So let's go first to my good old co-host, Peter. Over to you, sir.
I mean, we got close to getting that many people on the podcast on Sunday, didn't we? Pretty much.
we put a pretty good effort in, I thought.
Including a new friend as well, who we randomly met when we were starting it off.
Yeah, and I met some more on the way back as well. Another Simon, weirdly enough. So there's three Simons on the podcast in the end. Simon from Jersey, hello if you're listening. And especially Simon from Chichester, who was that first person on the pod, if you're listening as well. Apparently he said he's going to tune in every week now. So we're giving you a name check here, Simon. Hope you appreciate that. And carry on listening, sir. Right, Peter. Sorry, yes, carry on.
Yeah, I think it feels like, I feel it is a missed opportunity Sunday. It felt like City, we never had a chance in semi-final. We were all like, you know, we were never going to beat them. But I thought United were well below par and didn't really do an awful lot other than try and restrict us. And when to either end of the match, Bitoma was running at them quite a lot, we caused them real problems and arguably should have scored a couple of chances. Undav had a chance where he miscontrolled. Welbeck had a chance in the second half of normal time. And then Bitoma had a really good chance where he miscontrolled and then actually possibly could have been sent off. He was a little late on De Gea, having already been booked for also miscontrolling and being late on one of their players. Hmm. And you could argue another referee on another day would have red carded him, and he probably couldn't really complain if he'd been sent off, to be honest. But yeah, that was, we had our, I mean, Sanchez made two or three really good saves. But yeah, as much as I generally believe we'd have probably got beaten by City anyway, I think it's a missed opportunity. I'm really surprised, though, at the lack of goals. I mean, I said on last Friday's pod that I thought it was 3-2 either way. I thought there'd be goals, whatever happens. And yet both teams just seem to, well, especially United, just seem to have an aim of cancelling us out and trying to catch us on a break, which for them, it's flattering in a way for us that they didn't really have any ambition and didn't really, and their main aim was to catch us on a break. But, and as both with Forest and United, both of their main chances came from us. Our passing at the back was not great in either game, and we struggled a bit where compared to our normal Christmas, and actually gave the ball away a lot at the back. And both, well, two Forests, one Forest goal, one Forest penalty, and a lot of United's chances came from us making big mistakes at the back, whereas in previous weeks we've been working really well. That's not to say we didn't break through quite a few times and have chances, but we also did give the ball away in quite dangerous places quite a lot. Yeah. United arguably should have taken one or two of those.
I think, you say United were under par. I think to a degree they were, but I do think considering their weaknesses in defence, which we all thought might be a key factor in this game, I thought their defence actually played pretty well. I thought Wan-Bissaka was their best player because to a large but not exclusive degree, he kept Mittema quiet. And I think the link up between Mittema and Estupiñán wasn't as effective as it might have been. I think Wan-Bissaka had a lot to do with that. But also I think they looked good. United. There was a period, I think it was midway through the second half, where they got
their best spell.
Started playing better, and that's very symptomatic. Almost that match is a symptom of their season as a whole, a microcosm of their season, which has been up and down and stop and start. And somehow they've got more points than they probably should have for the way they've played over the course of the season in the league. But that's a sign of, I suppose, the quality of players they've got and something in the mentality there that he's building, I think, Ten Hag. But in terms of this game, yeah, I thought it was very even. It felt like a 0-0 game. That's not to say an awfully boring game, but it wasn't brilliant. It was.
I'm not saying we deserve to win. My point is more that if we'd played better to our best, then we probably would have won. That's disappointment. I think we should have won, given the chances. 0-0 was about right.
Yeah, that's where the disappointments come for me. I think it was partly attritional in places, but it was mainly the fact that we weren't at our best. Maybe it's fatigue, maybe it's injuries, rotating not how we wanted to, but for one reason or another, we weren't at our best. And I think if we were, particularly in my case, I think, I'm sure you probably agree, if Evan Ferguson was fit and at his best, I think he was the missing ingredient, probably for the Forest game as well. He could have made the difference in that particular game. It felt there was something missing and it felt like it was him. But certainly we were under par for whatever reason. And if we hadn't have been, we could have got through. And it would have been nice to find out if we could have beaten City. I know chances are we wouldn't. They are the best team in the world, in my opinion, at the moment. And, the Wolves manager we've just discovered thinks we are. That's another matter. They are a sensationally good team. We probably would have lost the final. Because it's after the end of the league season, it probably doesn't particularly matter whether we go through or not in terms of our schedule, other than we might be a bit more dead on our feet in a final against City, which wouldn't be great. But it wouldn't affect the rest of the season, I don't think, because we've got another goal to aim for anyway. But what I least wanted was 120 minutes, particularly if it's then the psychological downer of losing. And that's exactly what we got, which is annoying. But Raymond, the gent, let's bring you in, sir. What are your thoughts on the game?
Thoughts on the game is I thought we actually shaded it. I mean, we had more possession, we had more shots, we had 15 shots, which surprised me. And we had something like 5-6 on target. Although I read somewhere that De Gea made 7 saves. I'm still trying to work out how he made 7 saves if we only had 5 shots on target. But anyway,
deflections or something?
Ignoring
passbacks.
It did. I thought Sanchez made a couple of good saves, particularly one off that deflected Rashford shot.
Yes.
I know this has been aired elsewhere, but I'm slightly surprised that perhaps Roberto didn't do a very late swap for Sanchez for Steele, or Steele for Sanchez for the shootout. Mainly because Steele, as he demonstrated on Wednesday, quite often saves penalties, rather more than most goalies.
Yeah, he saved 4 in the Newport shootout, didn't he, for example?
Yeah, he 4 in one game, one shootout is obviously exceptional. So that was perhaps an opportunity missed. The first 6 penalties we we took absolutely solid, really good penalties. Mm. Sanchez got close to a couple of those. I think got a hand on one of them.
Sabitzer, yeah. Mm.
And which was a shame he didn't save that. And March managed to reproduce what he did at Charlton, which was a shame. You know, it's. I was surprised he didn't try something different, to be honest. I mean, I thought having gone for the high one and missed it in the Charlton game, that he wouldn't go high a second time. But it is what it is. I thought we were the better side. A friend of mine who supports Manchester United didn't feel that they offered much and thought, you know, we were the better side and should have won. And, you know, at the end of the day, we just didn't take the things. We just seemed to be very slightly less sharp. And we clearly on Wednesday, I know we're coming on to it, lacked energy, but we lacked a bit of accuracy and we have lacked sharpness. And, you know, whether it's just the season catching up with us, I don't know, but it's... one feels that was March a couple of times, had good runs, did a pass sort of 6 inches behind the player he was passing to. So they had to wait for the ball and then bring it back from behind them. I mean, that's just one example, but there are other players doing similar things. And the smallness of the squad, which perhaps we'll come back to later, I think is counting against us. The fact that Roberto only did 2 substitutions in 120 minutes is, I think, unusual and arguably caught up with us on Wednesday. There just isn't the depth in the squad. And with about 6 players out at the moment, you know, the fact we've got quite a few teenagers coming on, I mean, or near teenagers like Afar on Wednesday, it's difficult. And I think, I mean, the lesson to me is that we haven't got the depth of squad at the moment to sustain a European campaign. We just wouldn't be able to. I think our league form would suffer, a la West Ham this year and other teams in past years. And we just haven't got the depth. Injuries haven't helped, obviously. But you have to allow for that. You have to plan for that. And to use Paul Barber's ancillary thing in other contexts, but we're always doing anticipatory planning. Having a small squad is not anticipatory planning.
Mm.
So I think it's a shame. I still think we played some good football. And I still think, you know, to a degree, we didn't allow Man U to play.
Yeah. Interesting points there, Raymond. We'll go straight back to you, Peter. But just one thing from me, actually, on the matter of the squad size. I know, Peter, you're going to say we should have had more people. We did say so. But in terms of the squad size, that is more... We know it's a Graham Potter thing. He likes to work with the smaller squad. Potter's obviously, that was the summer thing. And what we had in September was his squad because the window had closed. We also know Tony Bloom doesn't like to do business in January to any great degree. So perhaps it's a bit misleading to just look at what's happened in January as well. But we're still kind of not quite sure what De Zerbi's ideal squad preferences are in terms of numbers. Obviously, you know, best quality you can get, but in terms of numbers, we don't really know yet, do we, I suppose? And we've got one or two signing rumours going on, which we'll talk about later on, which might be an indicator, actually. But you wanted to come back in on the matter of the match.
Yeah, anyway. I've got a few kind of comments around what Raymond was saying. Firstly, squad-wise, I think part of the problem is I think Naylor was saying the other day that there are injuries and double injuries in some positions. And also we just don't have backup to some key players. Estupiñán was really, really struggled, I thought, on Wednesday. There's no real obvious backup for him. And the only player who's regularly played at left back instead is Lamptey, who's injured at the moment. To say, no, there's no real option to back him up. You know, players like that who haven't really, we haven't really got a second option. He doesn't seem to favour Gilmore. I mean, Gilmore surely should have played some time over the last 210 minutes or whatever, but he hasn't featured, which is a pretty damning indictment of De Zerbi's view of him, in my view, and actually may well see him go in the summer. If he can't get on when we're playing 210 minutes in the space of, 4 days, 3 and a bit days, then that's quite worrying.
And also the Forest game with Undav, you could probably say, is another one. Although
Undav did score on Wednesday, obviously, as well, so, you know, can't really... And the other thing I was going to say was I take the point about Steele and penalties, but Steele's 4 penalties were against Newport and the 3 were against Charlton. Yes, he saved one on Wednesday, but Which penalties do you think he actually would have got near to? I don't even think he'd have, size-wise, he'd have got a hand to the one that Sanchez did. His size, he's not big enough to have. I don't think there's any penalty where I look at it and go, well, Steele might have got to that. They were all really good penalties, to be fair. United took seven really good ones. One Sabitzer was still a pretty decent one. And there was one I thought might have gone over the bar. He kind of leaned back a little bit and it hit kind of almost the underside of the top of the goal and went in. And at one point, there were fans go around me go out cheering because they thought it was going over.
I'd agree with that because I think, he wouldn't have got to any of those if he'd moved the way he did. The only question is, would he have jumped differently? And because obviously Sanchez didn't go the right way every time, would Steele have gone the right way on some of the others? And if so, would he have got them? A couple of them were passed into the other corner, but it's very hard to say Steele would have dived the other way and then he would have saved that.
They were right in the corner, though, I think. United took some really good penalties, and so did we.
They might be people that can take the penalty to either side with a last-minute change. Mm. There's certain players, we know Tony's like that, we know there's other people like that, who can direct it a different way according to what the goalie's doing. So it's hypothetical, but I'm not sure.
It was interesting to see Lewis Dunk taking the pressure one, though, the fifth one.
Yeah, I mean, how many times? He just scores each time, doesn't he?
So my point is, assuming McAllister goes in the summer, why not have Lewis Dunk as our penalty taker? You know, we already give him free kicks. He never scores those, unless the keeper's not in the goal anymore. So, you know, why not give him the penalties? He's never missed one, I think, in a shootout, I think I'm right in saying. He's the only one, I think, who scored against both Charlton and against Man U.
Yeah.
He always takes a really good penalty.
Yeah, he never misses them. And in fact, I was worried about Webster, and Webster scored a pretty similar goal to the Dunk.
I think Estupiñán, they all three defenders took brilliant ones.
Yeah.
Chronically.
Well, Estupiñán scored one in international break last time out as well, didn't he, as well? So, you know, there are other options there. And if we do lose McAllister, obviously Grosch, you know, I know he's missed some, but I think his proportions are still reasonably good.
He took a really good one again on Sunday.
Right in the corner, you know.
Yeah. Exactly, so, where McAllister put it.
Yeah. Raymond, yeah.
Oh, I mean, Steele certainly wouldn't have done any worse than Sanchez had he been brought on. I mean, and I just think he actually moves slightly differently. I noticed when he saved the Notts Forest one, he actually does a small jump and then does the dive. Whereas Sanchez just tends to do the dive. So sort of Steele quickly has some quite quick feet in terms of, and he gets that sort of 10, 12 inches moving in the direction. If he has gone in the right direction, he's more likely to then reach the ball.
So in terms of that Sabitzer one, which he got his hand to and couldn't tip it out, maybe he could have got to that because his footwork was different. Definitely his reach isn't better, but maybe his footwork. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, possibly.
I think it would have been really harsh to take, in my favourite word, to take off Sanchez after the game he had.
Yeah.
And probably even a really big blow to his confidence as well. And also, he did save one from Ward-Prowse, which players very rarely do this season, which he then, obviously, the rebound was then put in. But he, for a penalty shootout, would have saved one from Ward-Prowse.
And I suppose you've also got the thing of, well, it feels like he's never saves penalties. Apparently, he's saved three in open play in normal game time, which is Calvert-Lewin was one of them, wasn't it? And I think there was Saints was a game this season, wasn't it?
Ward-Prowse,
and then there was
he put the rebound in.
There was one earlier. Was it Wolves or somebody in the past? Anyway, but it feels like he never saves them. And in a funny sort of way, maybe you kind of think, apart from the fact he's had a good game anyway, and had it not been for an uncharacteristically amazing performance from Moises Caicedo or Felipe Caicedo, as Match of the Day described him in their intro. If it hadn't been for him, Sanchez could have been man of the match. And it also feels as if, well, you know, isn't he overdue that? You can have a sixth sense, an intuition, whatever you want to call it, that maybe this might be the moment that you do want Sanchez in there. Because at some point, he's going to save some penalties. He's a big lad. If he improves his technique, because he's still quite young, he could improve at those things. He could be sensational in penalties in the future. Who knows? I mean, I must admit, that's the one time I've won that shambles of a man, Eni Martinez, in goal, because he's pretty good in shootouts.
I mean, he's pretty good generally, to be fair.
In general, yeah, unfortunately.
I would very happily have Martinez in our goal, to be honest.
On that basis,
would
you happily have Harry Kane up front and Bruno Fernandes in midfield as well?
Realistically, yes, I would have both of them in there and ignore the hypocrisy.
Peter, you can tangibly hear, ladies and gentlemen, Peter selling himself to the devil.
I'm not denying I'm a hypocrite. I'm a massive hypocrite. And also, you brought me on nicely to Bruno Fernandes, who is an absolute arsehole.
In terms of our penalty takers, if we weren't using McAllister, I mean, I liked the way that Estupiñán took his penalty. I thought it was really good. And I would actually wouldn't mind switching to him. I mean, he's... As a left footer, he did what March didn't do, and I would be, he's quite young still, so I would be inclined to do that. The only other player who could cover Estupiñán, going back to an earlier comment, is of course Solly March. But then if you have Solly March playing at left back, who would you then bring on to play in the wide position, particularly given Sarmiento is injured?
But weirdly, he pushed Solly back to left back on Wednesday and then brought on O'Fire so he could move forward again. It was a rather odd combination.
Yeah, it wasn't ideal, was it?
He's definitely not our penalty taker, though.
No, I think at this stage now, with two in a row in key matches, both cup competitions, he's effectively cost us in essence, you know. You have to think from the confidence point of view alone, you don't really want him to take one really at this stage. Unless we're something like 3-1 up in a shootout, we're two ahead of them and this is the one to clinch it, you know, then let him take the fourth one, you know what I mean? But I think it's a worry that this could go on and on. We've seen with England's in shootouts, this thing can keep going. It's not something that necessarily he can get out of so easily, Peter.
Yeah, my dad did point out he got nearer this time. So, you know, if you carry on at this rate. I think I minded that he probably... I mean, I understand why he took it, because Mitoma missed one at the World. There are only four players left. Obviously, Sanchez is going to go last. Veltman, I don't know, he'd ever taken a penalty in a game situation, so I've no idea. And then Caicedo missed against Charlton as well.
Webster's taken one for us, has he? Webster. So, and I thought he might miss, but I did know that Solly would miss. The only reason I was surprised with Solly's miss was how he missed, because I thought he was going to try and get it on target, knowing how it went badly wrong last time, and get it to... carefully on target and have it saved. And actually, that I was wrong in that regard, I have to say. Raymond?
Well, I given that both Mitoma and Caicedo had missed against Charlton, I mean, we've got...
Mitoma didn't miss against Charlton. He missed for Japan in the World Cup.
Oh, it's for Japan. Anyway, I think the point is that the only person... It's only Sanchez and Veltman who we don't know how they would have taken it. And I think I might have been inclined to put Veltman up ahead of March, but anyway.
But Veltman might not have wanted to. That's the thing. I mean, it is a lot of it down to which players will put themselves forward. You can't make a player take a penalty. It would be, you know, if Veltman felt really uncomfortable, then you leave until 10 or 11.
And also, who's available? Because if you think Danny Welbeck, Evan Ferguson, Adam Lallana, there's a number of names there. You'd think, oh yeah, he'll take one.
But when Welbeck missed a penalty against West Brom, I read it was like it's first penalty he'd ever taken in normal play or something like that.
Okay, well, maybe Welbeck then.
I'm sure it was like something he'd virtually, because he'd never been the main striker, so he'd never really taken penalties.
Lallana's taken them and scored them in shootout.
Yeah, I'm sure he has. Yeah.
And obviously for Evan Ferguson, we'd have to assume would be confident.
Well, he scored a Charlton Ferguson, didn't he?
Yeah, a very good one. Yeah.
And can we just say, for all the discredit about Undav, he did put his penalty away.
Yeah, I feared for him, but he took it really well.
I mean, to be fair to Undav, it was that chance that came to him. He just hit his shin and sort of went off. He'd only been on the pitch for a few seconds and really hadn't got the pace of the game. He did have another chance where he did, coming across the penalty area, he held off the defenders and got a good shot that was well saved. So I was slightly surprised he didn't start with his physicality against Notts Forest. But why don't we move on to the Notts Forest game? Because time moved on.
Yeah, definitely in a second. But actually, Peter, sorry, did you want to come in on?
Just to quickly say, he'd also had an assist if Mitoma takes that ball in. Well, he was the one who poked it to Mitoma for that chance.
And
I agree with Forrest, but I could understand, and we'll get on to Forrest, why they wanted the mobility of Buonanotte and Enciso. up front together. I can understand against Forest defence is quite old. I can get why they wanted a bit of pace up there.
Yeah, and one other final point from me on Undav. I think we've seen it before, and we saw it again at Wembley. That there was, I think it's the thing about the first touch. We've had it with Alou Reza, Jahanbakhsh, and we've had it with one or two other players as well. I think someone mentioned Lacardia was another name that comes to mind. I think Undav's a better player than those, I think, to be honest. But the first touch, having a good enough first touch to make a difference in a very tight area with very short amount of time, or to not have that extra touch, maybe to hit it first time in some circumstances. It feels as if he's trying to get slightly more time than he's actually being afforded. And that's something that could be learned behaviour. We don't know if he's it's a confidence thing, whether the confidence isn't quite there, so he wants that extra touch or wants to try and shuffle the position slightly more to get a better shot off, and then, of course, runs out of time, or whether it is just his technique. But by all accounts, friend of the show Tim, who we chatted to at Box Park on Sunday, said that his friend is a Belgium, he's a Mechelen fan, I think, but he's a big fan of Belgian football in general. And he was saying that Undav last season was exceptional. His first touch, getting shots away quickly, all of that was there. I know the quality of defence isn't the same, but nonetheless, there's a certain instinctiveness there which shows that he can do it. Whether he's going to be able to do that in the Premier League or against Premier League standard opposition in cups is another matter. If I'm still got some hope for him, I know a lot of people have 100% given up on him, and I'm worried the same way that others are that it's not looking good. But I'm still going to give him the benefit of the doubt for now, because he's not been having a run of games. And if you don't have a run of games and it's not happening for you, you haven't got the confidence. If you haven't got the confidence, your first touch and your shooting isn't going to be as good.
How to get that run of games?
That's it's a catch 22, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you do? Do you take a hit on some games while he finds his form? You know, at the moment we can't do that, obviously. In friendlies we can do it. In maybe early rounds of next season's cup competitions we might.
But even then they're quite far apart. There's no kind of consistency.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
3 weeks apart.
Yeah,
but
true.
But to be fair to I think it might be a confidence thing, Russell. I think you might be, you know, hit the nail on the head. But doesn't it help him when he does score a goal that's ruled out for offside? And it did take them quite a bit of time looking at it before they decided it was offside.
Yeah, it looked pretty offside from live, so I'm surprised it took that long, to be honest. Yeah, he was right on the line pretty much when he hit it in.
I mean, just scoring a goal actually in a Premier League game, you know, just might give him that ability to relax that fraction more, which gives you, strangely enough, that more time.
Yeah, absolutely. That was obviously offside, that header goal, wasn't it, for him? And he put it away well, but you would do when you're that close in, wouldn't you?
I hope I put that away well, to be honest.
Final bit in part one, because as Raymond said a minute ago, we do need to move on to the Forest game, but I've got one or two. Only briefly. I've got one or two more bits to do with Sunday that I want to talk about. First of all, I mentioned the BBC talking about Felipe Caicedo. I'm interested. Who is this? Is the brother as good? I'm assuming it's his brother.
There was a Felipe Caicedo who used to play.
Oh, right.
Isn't it from Man City or someone like that?
That's why. Yeah, that's why they've got... Right, OK, that makes sense. Can I also just say they said Enseso in the commentary? I think it was Steve Wilson. I'm not sure who it was. Come on, guys. No one gets that wrong except for Andy Naylor, who calls him Enciso.
Or me.
And also, for everyone that's saying Encisco, it isn't Encisco either. It's Enciso.
It's not rhyme with disco.
He's South American. It's definitely Enciso.
Yeah, Felipe Caicedo played for Manchester City amongst a lot of clubs.
Oh, well spotted, Peter. I'm impressed with your knowledge, as always.
And Al Jazeera as well.
If you think of inciso, inciso is incisive.
Yes, but inciso isn't incisive.
Well, just call it Julio.
Yeah, Julio, yeah. We didn't even get to sing his song after all that.
Or Julio, some people probably would then.
Probably. In other BBC coverage, right at the front of the show, when they showed fans walking down the steps from Wembley Park Station on the way to Wembley Way, right at the beginning, our friend of the show, well, I say friend of the show, he's not been on the show, but friend of ours, Warren, who's in one of the WhatsApp groups, was there resplendent in his beard, almost as good as Sanjay's beard, I hasten to add, walking down the steps at the beginning of the programme. That's not bad, actually. We've had a bit of FA Cup history with friends of the show doing that. Simon Tipple, post-match with the Millwall game, was there celebrating with his arms in the air like this. I say like this, no one can see what I'm doing. At the end of the highlights on Match of the Day and also on BBC News. So there's a bit of a theme going on here with cup games, which is good to see. Also, we've continued our annoying record of never winning at Wembley. We had the two games in 83, a draw and then a defeat. We won't say how much by. We had the 1991 playoff. We had the Spurs away game when they were borrowing Wembley. We had the 2019 semi-final. And we've had the game, obviously, the other day. We have drawn two of those games, obviously, again, the weekend plus the original 83 game. But no overall joy. That's disappointing.
I find it odd they described it as a draw on Sunday because we didn't draw.
Well, we didn't. You know what I mean? It's one of those, isn't it?
Yeah, I saw the stat of two draws and four defeats. It's like, well, it's not really a draw, is it? We lost.
Well, only in the sense that when you know it's when they're talking about Wembley, you know they're talking about it went to whatever, penalties or something. But
I find also, it weird. I mean, we lost. You would have counted it as a win if we won on penalties, wouldn't you? Let's be honest.
Well, absolutely. A couple of quick graphics from the weekend as well. BBC coverage, they mentioned... they showed the run-in, so how the teams got there. Did you know that Man United won all four of their games 3-1, and they were all home matches? That's a bit bizarre.
I know they've had a lot of home cup games because I've got friends who've got home cup season tickets, and one of them's been moaning about how many games they've had to go up Manchester for.
I'm so sympathetic to that kind of thing. Of course I am. But no, I mean, they've had four home games in a row. I mean, we've had a fairly good draw, to be fair, apart from Liverpool.
We've played Liverpool and Man U. We've played two of the big six, to be fair.
That's true. Middlesbrough are very, very good at home. We kept them quiet, barring one goal. But 3-1 wins at home. I mean, that's in every round. That's kind of weird. But what I really wanted to talk about was their pre-weekend stats that were shown on the Cup Day coverage, the BBC, saying best attacks in Europe in 2023, the calendar year. There were three categories they mentioned. First of all, most shots on target per game. And this is the best in Europe. Don't forget, Brighton are top. We were top. It was 7.2 shots on target per game average. Bayern Munich, 6.9, and Real Madrid the same. Most shots in general, on or off target, Real Madrid, 19.1, the Albion, 18.8, and then it's Inter with 18.1. And expected goals per game, our old friend. Brighton are top of that, the average of 2.4. Man City 2.2 and Arsenal 2.1. So interestingly, all of those are in the English league. But also interestingly, we're above the two by far and away best teams in that division.
2 points on that. One is we haven't played loads of the big six this year in 2023. Liverpool are the only one, and Tottenham are the only ones in the league. And we're not saying Villa as well, or Newcastle.
It could get better, you're saying, Peter.
The other thing I would say suggests that while we may have found Ferguson, we do need to be more, take more of our chances.
Yeah. And Raymond?
Well, I was just going to say, we played Tottenham, Chelsea and Liverpool, so you know, not exactly sort of unknown clubs, are they? So, you know, that's not too bad. Actually, Chelsea's defence, until very recently, has been one of the best in the league. It's their attack that's been pathetic.
They were when we played them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when we played them, not when other people were playing them. I think at one stage they only conceded about 20 goals and we'd scored four of them.
Yeah, I think they've only conceded a couple more than us. But yeah, you're right. But I think Lampard's changed that generally.
Curtis mentioned as well, one other stat from BBC, they came up with a graphic saying most passes per 90 minutes in the Premier League since the time De Zerbi took charge of us. Lewis Dunk is top of that with this is per game. So it's 94 passes on average per game, ahead of Rodri of City with 92, Ruben Dias of City with 90, Adam Webster of Brighton with 83, Enzo Fernandez of Chelsea with 82. I don't know how he's managed that in that team. And Thiago Silva of Chelsea with 81. But Dunk is top of that list, so let's not say he can't pass the ball around. Also, Mittema, third highest tallies for dribbles this season in the Premier League. Again, this is all before the Forest game, so those stats may have changed slightly. Can I also throw in a couple of other stats? Manchester United, other observations from the weekend. Have you seen this thing about Man United? They've got a fan at Wembley who was having a haircut in the stadium, a proper haircut with clippers and all that. I've not seen it, but I've heard it.
Might as well double up your chat at the time, you know. No point wasting your time at the ground.
It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. And the other bit I love, it's actually from the league game, the Premier League game. Earlier in the day, we mentioned it on the podcast at Box Park, that Spurs were getting absolutely hammered at Newcastle. They lost 6-1, but the best bit about that is there was an anecdote where apparently a Spurs fan was going to listen on the radio to the commentary. He pulled into a petrol station just as it was kicking off, filled his tank up with petrol, ordered a coffee, went to the toilet, came back to his car, and they were 5-0 down. 25 minutes. Absolutely magnificent.
Well, we spent a lot of time in that service station.
21 minutes, yeah. 25 wouldn't have been quite enough time to have that before he'd driven off, would it? and also, we mentioned RDZ now being 50th in the 92 or in the top 50. By the way, he climbed 42 places in 23 Premier League games, just to clarify or just to update an extra element on that.
Yeah, and he hasn't had a summer yet as well, which is when most managers change.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And one final quirky fact, again, nothing to do with the weekend necessarily. It was mentioned on the WhatsApp groups. Evan Ferguson's dad, not Evan Ferguson, his dad was born in 1979, 8 years after I was. That makes me feel really young. And I'm sure it's the same with you guys as well.
I'm just really glad I'm younger than him.
Yes. Yeah. It'd be really awkward
if you were older, wouldn't it?
Well, exactly. Yeah. In terms of the Albion, just going back to the Wembley and all the other stuff, Brighton have now failed to score in four of our six games at Wembley. Not a great stat. That's in all competitions. And we remain winless, as we know. Apparently it's the most any club side has played at the stadium without ever winning there. So
we're not cheering me up after this week, Russ. You're not working great. You're not helping.
This uplifting podcast isn't quite so uplifting after all, is it?
It started off uplifting and then it's like gone into like...
Actually, I'm going to correct that, because in the same way that we lost the match, Peter was saying that we lost the match, we did actually score 6 goals on Sunday. The reality is we have put the ball in the back of the net and it did count at the time.
Yeah. Speaking of penalties, one other thing I've just remembered as well, of course, is I think we might have mentioned it in the last episode, but just in case we didn't, Man United have not had a good record with penalty shootouts. We've generally been quite good. We've lost our last two, well, now three. But Man United had a pretty bad run. It was going back, I think, 3 or 4 years. The last time they won was in an early round cup match against Rochdale. And guess who was in goal for Rochdale that day?
Didn't they have one in their run of losses where they lost 11-10 with De Gea didn't save any of his and then missed his own one in the Europa League final, I think it was.
Yeah, that was against Villarreal, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, didn't save 11 penalties and then missed his own one, so...
Yeah, so it was Sanchez, so he's not going
to... That's another reason why RDZ should have probably put Steele in goal for the penalty shootout.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Okay, well, anyway, that's it on that. One final thing I wanted to say very quickly on this was Box Park. How did you find it, Peter? Very quickly.
Yeah, it was good, yeah. There are no Man United fans there, which is always nice, given how they behaved on the day, some of them.
Yeah.
I thought it was excellent. I thought before the game it was good seeing Tony Bloom come and reassuring to hear him say that Roberto will be with us a long time. And I found after the game, you know, there was a few moments to have a bit of a pop, a bit of a dance.
Raymond, you've got some moves. I already know about this from before, but yeah, He's got some slick moves on the dance floor, ladies and gentlemen. The gent is also Mr. Slick. yeah, it was good. The only criticism I would have is that it was very, very loud, the music. I wish it was a bit quieter because you really had to shout. We had to move into that bar to the side, which was quieter, in order to record any content for the last episode. But and that's where it all got a bit fragmented, and I ended up not getting you on the podcast, Raymond. But it was good.
The easiest thing was simply taking my hearing aid out. When I took the hearing aid out, the volume of music went down. Yes. And strangely enough, I could hear people talking much easier because I was only hearing within about 3 foot. And of course, the sound background sound was cut out. So
yeah, well,
I
got
away with the hearing aid. Well, I thought the box part was a good experience and was excellent. And just as a final thing, I was talking to one of the guys down at the Amex when I was organising some parking for some future matches this week, and he was there, and they obviously had a good time at the Box Park, obviously disappointed by the result, but said that they obviously everybody felt a bit down at the Amex on Monday, but afterwards there was this sort of air of disappointment, and obviously the staff were all root, but really do root for the club, and you know, it was interesting to get that feedback.
And also one other thing, Peter, I know you might have wanted to have a rant on this, not that you like a rant, but very quickly on the fan, because I've ranted about it on the last episode, the Man United fans, there was a couple of homophobic idiots on the way up to Box Park that Alan and I experienced, and after the game there was a lot of sneery, ugly, classless, graceless, unpleasant, completely inappropriate behaviour from Man United fans all around the stadium, walking away. They were gloating right in our faces. I demonstrated to them why I disagreed with their views on that behaviour. And I'm surprised, and there probably were some incidents of violence going on, because they were right in their faces. There were quite a few people facing each other up. Nothing I saw happened, but I did see 7 or 8 incidents where something nearly happened. I've already got a long-standing opinion of Man United fans. Speaking broadly, of course, this is not all fair. I've got friends who are Man U fans and they're perfectly fine. Sanjay, we had on for the preview, lovely guy. And in fact, I sent a message to him telling him what had happened. He said, really sorry to hear your bad experience. And actually, in fact, just very quickly to, something weird's going on now on my phone. I'm just having a read back what he said, actually. He said, sorry to hear that. Sadly, like many clubs, we have our fair share of idiots, but occasionally more than our fair share. Just admit sometimes that I dislike away games more and more these days because of that toxic element. Apologies on behalf of the decent Reds. Was a very close game and really could have gone either way. Was tense without being particularly good. Stay well and stay in touch, which is lovely from him. Top guy, top fella. And there are some great Man United fans, but there are a disappointingly large number of idiots, aren't there, Peter?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I didn't go back to Box Park afterwards, because I didn't really want to get in, to engage with anyone who might be a dickhead and that sort of thing, and trying to avoid their gloating. They were outside, there were quite a lot of them just kind of like being pretty unpleasant. I went to school with a lot of Man U fans who'd never been to Manchester in their life and gloated about Man U, and I've had enough of gloating Man U fans. I've dealt with it enough growing up as a and they had no link to Manchester. They just chose to support Manchester United and they gloated about them.
And well, the ones of your school, you just think, well, you could just pick anything, can't you?
There's no achievement to it.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, my slight annoyance actually, I've seen enough Man U fans over the years to know that some of them are dickheads and some aren't. As you say, Sam, just not. I've got friends who aren't as well, who are Man U fans and aren't dickheads and actually nice people. But yeah, the thing that annoyed me was that bloody Wembley started playing Glory, Glory, Man United. So, and I'd have said the same if they played Sussex by the Sea if we'd won. It's a 7-6 on penalty. We've just lost our best ever chance to get a penalties. Why play a song that is not only is it their song, but it's also a massively gloaty song as well? I mean, Sussex by the Sea is pretty chilled and it's not really a particularly, it's just a celebratory song where, it's Glory, Glory, Man United, a really unpleasant song.
Yeah.
And why play it and taunt Brighton for, I mean, I would have liked to have cheered the players off, but I just I can't face just sitting here listening to them dance in Glory, Glory, Man United.
I think some people have thought that's a bit over the top as a criticism, but I actually kind of agree with you. I see where
it's a neutral venue. It's not. We're not playing Old Trafford.
And I mean, if they'd left it 5 or 10 minutes later when more fans had gone out, yeah, maybe or something, it's a bit too soon, so to speak. Yeah. Right, listen, we need to break for half time. In part two, we're going to talk about Nottingham Forest. Okay, so welcome back to part two. That we talked about Wembley, we talked about Sunday. Now it's time to get into the delight that was Wednesday, where we bounced back with aplomb. No, not quite. Well, we lost 3-1. Oh, dear. I could see this one coming. Forest are good at home. They've got a big atmosphere at home in all their games. It's under the lights. They were overdue a win because they'd lost 4 or 5 in a row. And, of course, they did beat us 3-1. Alistair, good friend of the show, who does guest hosting match day specials, was in town for the game, as was fellow friend and Mancunian, well, in terms of residency anyway, Nick. He was there as well, and a couple of other people besides. So here is the audio from the match day with Alistair, with Nick, with Josh from the Together podcast, and a couple of other people besides, including someone you'll hear is John. That's Johnny from the States.
So here we are in Nottingham. We've just been to the Canal House and had some excellent meal and some good beers. And I'm here with Wedgie, John, Nick, Josh, Brittany, Courtney and Charlie. And we're just now walking to the ground. But I suppose the way to start today's podcast, we can't really just continue without mentioning the elephant in the room, which was, of course, what happened on Sunday at Wembley. And, just sort of how we feel about that. It was one of those... one of those days where, certainly for me, I kind of really felt for Solly. But as he walked up, I think many of us sort of wondered if it was version 1.0 or version 2.0 of Solly March that was going to step up and take that penalty. And unfortunately, it was version 1.0. But it is what it is when we are. We've got to pick ourselves up and go from there. But yeah, how did you feel about Wembley? You were sitting quite near me, John. At Wembley, we were up in the fifth tier.
I was. Well, firstly, it was great to have a completely different view of the game. And as you said, when Solly walked up, I could tell from his body language it wasn't looking good. I'm still kind of hungover from that game, so yeah. A few pints inside now. I'm looking forward for a good bounce back tonight.
Yeah, we will. And I think we haven't even seen the team sheet yet because we're about an hour before kickoff. No, that will come through in a minute. But I think one thing that stuck out for me was the last time Man United won a penalty shootout was against Rochdale. And guess who was in between the posts that day? It was our good old
Sanchez.
Roberto Sanchez. Yeah, so I don't know what your feelings are about today's game.
I'm not sure who's going to be in goal. I thought Sanchez had a great game on Sunday, and the gentleman in front of me was pissed off that Sanchez didn't save the one he got his hand to, but I thought he had a great game, so I'd expect him to be playing tonight.
Yeah, and I've never seen Sanchez save a penalty, but I have seen him get a hand on one in the past as well. And it did look so close. In fact, from where we were, it looked like it might just have been enough. But yeah, there we are. It was what it was. But I suppose part of the news is yesterday in the press conference, Roberto De Zerbi said that Buonate is going to start today. So we've got a bit of new blood coming into the squad today as well. Obviously, we only had 2 substitutions in 120 minutes and penalties, which was, I suppose that was part of the conversation that was had online after the match. But
I think the team were dead on their feet at the end of the 120 minutes. Yep. And obviously the depth of our bench showed, especially when they're bringing on Sancho with 5 minutes to play in the game. So yeah, hopefully some of the kids will get a run tonight and prove themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing that must be said is this is the best football I've seen in my life, watching Brighton.
Absolutely. I've been watching since, I think, 1972, and I couldn't believe it. And the seats we had on at the final really gave a different angle and the view of the play. So unbelievable how some of the guys played, Caicedo especially.
Yeah, that was a definite deserved man of the match performance from him, I think.
Absolutely.
Interestingly, the highlights didn't seem to reflect that. They seemed to show more Man United plays than ours, and I think we were the better team, so yeah, that just seemed a bit confusing, shall we say, from the TV producers.
Right, absolutely. We were sort of saying in the pub that if that was a boxing match, that Brighton would have definitely would have won points, maybe a split decision, but we would have won.
Yeah, absolutely. Great, well, really good to meet you, John. John's come all the way over from San Francisco. and his dedication to the Albion is definitely not questioned. So it's great to have him here, and we'll move around and go from there.
Lovely, great talking with you. Thank you.
So, also really good to welcome Josh, who we were chatting to at the Box Park, and he's here with Brittany. He's recently rejoined these shores from stateside, and it's wonderful to have him, great friend of the podcast, Brighton Rock. So, Josh, what were your reflections on Wembley? And particularly, I was chatting to you earlier about Mittema, and you had some interesting insight on what was happening for him as well, because at points he did seem to be in the pocket of... shall we say that right back from Man United?
Yeah, Wan-Bissaka. First of all, let's give Wan-Bissaka credit where it's due. He's a very good one-on-one defender, isn't he? I think we've seen St. Maximin almost burst into tears once or twice when Wan-Bissaka's been marking him. But it was an off day, wasn't it, for Karu? He didn't seem right. I don't know if anybody else that was at Wembley saw it. Anyone that's listened to me on the show before will know that I also have a podcast together, BHA. Russ has been on there a lot as well. We're kind of like brother podcasts at this point.
Friend podcast of the show.
Yeah, and I noted that Mittema was very off, and he was taking on fluids from about 25 minutes onwards. And you'll note he didn't even take a penalty.
And it wasn't even a hot day. I mean, even at the penalty shootout, it was absolutely chucking it down with rain. It was proper Manchester weather we had then.
Yeah, it really was. And he looked just dead on his feet, didn't he? But from 25 minutes onwards, other people at Wembley, I'm sure someone else will have clocked it, but he was going over to that bench every 10 minutes, taking on water fluids, you know, whatever it is that they're bringing on, the electrolytes and that. And
yeah,
something just wasn't right with him. So I'm really interested to see that we're now on Wednesday, 3 or 4 days removed, and he's starting again tonight, so it'll be interesting.
And we've just had the team sheet out, haven't we, which Josh has just shown me, and we've got 3 changes from Sunday, so do you want to just quickly go through them if you remember off the top of your head?
Yeah, absolutely. Steele in goal again,
which is the big news, I suppose.
It really is. Yeah, we were all in two minds, weren't we, just a minute ago, whether he would get the start or not, but Steele starts. Colwill in for Webster.
Yep.
Seems the usual change, doesn't it?
A bit of squad rotation, which is fair.
Yeah, and then Bonanotte in, which Deserby's already been a bit of a spoiler, right?
We'd already talked about that just a minute ago, yep.
Yep, in for Welbeck. Not a great amount of changes. And I suppose our depth really warrants that, doesn't it? There's not a huge amount of changes we can make.
And I suppose one thing that disappointed me, I heard a few reports of people giving Tony Bloom, our great leader, a bit of grief at the end of Sunday, just for our strength of, or the depth of our squad, which seems a bit churlish, really, given that it was the best football that I've watched in my life. Admittedly, not that particular match, but this season, I've been in seventh heaven.
Yeah, it's absurd, isn't it, really? Like, we all know that there's squad depth problems, but at the end of the day, Trossard absolutely earned his move. Cucurella was, I mean, who could have expected any club to come in and bid £70 million for him?
Yeah.
We might
not get some of those add-ons that we were promised at the moment.
And it's easy for people to remember that, you know, we've got people like Enoch Mwepu. No one can account for what happened to Mwepu.
Absolutely.
I think
Moda still out to the end of the season, and Lamptey as well.
Yeah, and then you've got players like Lamptey, you've got players like Moda, you've got players like Sarmiento that are all now hurt. And it is what it is. Teams will go through these runs. But the idea that self-purported Brighton fans have the audacity to say anything to Tony Bloom, do you think he's not aware? He runs a genius business, a genius club. Everyone in this country that's worth their salt in football opinions wants Tony Bloom to manage their own club.
Yep.
Do you think he's not aware of what the squad depth looked like?
We often joked of Todd Ball. Ballbag, I think we call him.
We'll go with Ballbag.
Yeah. Actually wanting to buy the Amex and also putting in a transfer request for Tony Bloom at various points. I would much rather have Tony Bloom. And the reception that he got at the Box Park was something else as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was brilliant. What more can you say about Tony Bloom? We all know.
Yeah.
We all know how much of a legend he is.
Yeah, we love him. So just before we finish then, obviously we're getting a bit closer to the ground. We're about to go over that Trent Bridge, going in between Notts County and the City Ground. But what are your feelings about the match tonight? What are you thinking about tonight?
This is probably going to sound terrible when you hear it back, but Forest are terrible, aren't they? They're in an awful run of form this year, especially this last couple of months. I know we're tired. But emotionally, I think is the biggest thing for us. This is going to be a big emotional test. I got a little bit of flack online for saying that this was probably our most important game of the season this weekend. Everyone said I was a bit reactionary, and then De Zerbi came out and said the exact same thing.
I think
from a mentality point of view, like, he's right, isn't he? Like, this is a huge one.
Psychologically, it's about bouncing back, which is what Man United did after getting knocked out on Thursday night.
Exactly.
They stuck with it, even though they were exhausted, and that's what we need to do tonight as well. But let's not underestimate Forest either, because they are fighting for their Premier League status.
And
rightly so.
You never want to play, right? You never want to play teams that are fighting for their lives.
And I was at the home match, even though I live in Manchester, and they played us really well. It was a pretty dull match in the end, and a draw. But at the same time, they've got the ability to take us to a draw at home. So we're at their ground now. We're on their terms.
Yeah, no, exactly. Their form of late has been shocking, but they're still fighting for their lives, and it only takes one performance to turn it around. And they'll be seeing and hoping to see a mentally weak side tonight.
Yeah.
I don't think De Zerbi will ever allow a side of his to be mentally weak, personally.
Yeah.
And I think we'll go out and I think we'll play really well, but I think that's going to be the hope. Forest are going to try and pile on pressure early and see if we capitulate.
Brilliant. Well, thanks ever so much, Josh. Great to hear you, and thanks so much for your thoughts and your insight into what's going on there on the pitch with Albion, and also what happened on Sunday. Here's hoping that tonight will bring us another 3 points or pints. Here we go. So it's half time at the City Ground, and it's 1-1. And 10 seconds before half time, we were thinking we were going in a goal up. And I'm here with Nick, and what do you feel like now, Nick?
That's gutting, isn't it? 75% possession. But there was only one way this lot were going to score against us, and that was through something like what just happened there, an own goal or a penalty. We saved the pen, but we can't do anything about that own goal. I mean, that was just unbelievable. We've dominated this game. We look really, really good. And this amazingly loud PA is...
which then absolutely, completely drowned out the start of the match as well.
Yeah,
it was impossible to sing even the Forest fans.
Yeah, I know. We're gonna win this game. I promise you that. But we'll do an Albion. We'll shoot ourselves in the foot if we're not careful, because we're just not pulling the trigger at the right times. It's very, very frustrating.
Although we got 8 shots with 5 on target compared to their 7 shots with only 2 on target, and of course we scored 2 goals. Unfortunately, one of them was Pascal Gross in our own net, which still got on. And the other thing, I suppose, which mustn't go without mention, we saved the penalty. We've kind of put that penalty hoodoo to bed right at the start of the match.
No, just imagine if he'd been playing at Wembley. But, I mean, it was it's another one of those. We look so good on the up, you know, it's that De Zerbi thing. Up to the last 20 metres, we look fantastic. Just can't bury it once we get in that last 20 metres. We're going to win this. I'm absolutely convinced by that. But we've got to sort out that final touch.
Just a quick... I've got to mention Steele's distribution, though, because there's a couple of balls that he just picked out that... I think we're next class. And again, you can see why he's starting again now. I think it's just his distribution's a bit better. And obviously that penalty save. Again, I've still not seen Sanchez save a penalty, but I've now seen Steele save at least 2 in the last few games I've been to.
And also, look at our centre-back pairing, Colwell and Dunk.
Colwell, yeah.
Unbelievable. I mean, those two are... Dunk, again, absolutely class. And Colwell is looking really accomplished at the back there. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we've just got to make sure we top one or two chances away. I mean, the atmosphere here isn't as electric as I was expecting it to be. It's good. But
the Forest fans, to be fair, they're making a decent noise. It's not like Man United or anything
like
that.
No. It's a decent atmosphere, but you can tell the tension's there when we're on the ball.
Yeah.
And we've had 75% of the ball, and you can feel the tension, so that can work against them. But giving it away 10 seconds before the bloody half time hasn't helped us, has it?
That really was. And Steele got his hand on it, and we're sitting to the right of the goal, and it looked to me like he'd managed to put it into the side netting. Yeah. But unfortunately, all he did was manage to just help it in the goal, or at least wasn't enough on it, and which of course Gross's deflection had taken into the goal.
And it might be us, but from our angle, Mitoma looks on fire, but he's not getting enough of the ball.
But having said that, he's had a couple of good runs. Yeah. And then last thing to say before we finish at half-time, Buonate scoring a goal.
Yeah.
Is this his debut start?
I think
it is, and what a goal it was. I mean, it was a bit pinging around the six-yard box at the other end of the pitch to where we are here. But what a great goal.
Yeah, it was a great goal. You know what I'm looking forward to is another Argentinian pinging it in at this end, like a Joa.
Well, I'll just take an Ali Mack one, to be honest. Right then, well, we'll leave you here. We'll come back to you from the City Ground a little bit through the second half, where hopefully we will have at least gone ahead again. So that's it then. I think we've just witnessed the end of our season. 3-1 loss. We didn't have any highlights of music or singing because there wasn't really any singing in the second half. Although it's good to hear some nice support for Solly March in the first half. But, oh, three-word summary, Nick, of that?
I had disappointing, but better than that, utter shite. what can you say? It looked like tired legs, tired minds, you know, nothing. All our best players were off form today, weren't they?
Yeah.
Mitoma couldn't quite do it for us today.
Dunk had a mare. Giving away a penalty.
Yeah,
Casada. It did look like a penalty. They did a replay of it in the stadium. We could see that.
Yeah.
Mitoma just seemed well off the pace, doesn't he? That their right back again seemed to have been watching Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah, it feels like they've sussed him out because we missed a goal as well, didn't he?
That miss. Although I do want our old Mitoma back. Because if we had him back.
Yeah,
you know, we're winning that game tonight.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the poorest we've seen them.
Yeah, I mean, this season, the worst display I've seen.
I mean, how many games have we been to? 8 or 9 this season? I know
something like that.
Yeah. Live, I think that's probably the worst we've seen them play. And it all started so well, so brightly, didn't it? Really, with the opening goal and lad.
Well, and the penalty save as well.
Yeah, penalty save. I felt, you know, this could be going in our favour, but how many times we shot ourselves in the foot. Didn't we?
Yep.
Again and again and again. So, like you say, have we seen the end? Those two games, Sunday and today, could be season defining, couldn't it?
Well, they are season defining. It's just whether or not De Zerbi's got it in him and the players have it in them to pull it about and actually start winning again. But that's a big ask. It must feel like being in a big hole. And you can't see out of it at the moment. I imagine psychologically that's how it must feel for those players at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, we've got Wolves on Saturday, haven't we?
Yep.
So Wolves are resurgent. They've won a few games now. They've got themselves out of relegation. They've got nothing really to play for now apart from free play. You know, they can...
And being our bogey team again, which they often are.
Yeah. So, let's just hope De Zerbi can just somehow, you know,
get belief back into those players who, to be honest, look like, that second half looked like they'd given up all belief.
It did. It looked like I don't know, again, it always feels might look different on the telly, and people who were watching on telly might say it's different, but to us, didn't it? It looked like they'd given up that second half. And like I say, what is the point of us taking a corner or a bloody free kick? I give up. Because we might as well just give it straight back to the goalie. But anyway, you know, I think the best thing part of that was when we had the stoppage and all that banter between the fans. That was quite good fun, wasn't it?
Their fans, they got behind their team. There was a stoppage when they had a player who got kicked in the face by one of their own players, and they stopped singing during that. And then we looked lively, and then Mitoma missed.
Yeah.
And at that point, the game turned. It looked like we could have. You know, we could have got gone ahead again, but actually, no.
Yeah. I have to say, and I don't know if it came across on the telly, but the atmosphere they generated towards the end of that game was fantastic, wasn't
it? Yeah, no, it was good. It was good.
And you could tell it was lifting them, and we just weren't being lifted. And our fans were the quietest I've ever heard us.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we knew that was what was going to happen, and we didn't really were convinced that we were going to be... In that game, it just didn't. Nothing in that our end felt convinced that we were going to win that game. And even when we went 1-0 up,
we didn't look convincing. So, you know,
yeah,
it sort of fed into our atmosphere. But anyway, what can we say?
Yeah, it was really hard for the fans to lift the players, and likewise, it was obviously the players weren't able to lift us as fans, and as a result of that, it was pretty flat. But yeah, so there we go. We march on.
One couple of things, though, out of Nottingham. Nottingham is a lovely city,
Yeah, and we had a great time at the Canal House.
Yeah.
I'll say that carefully.
Yeah, recommend the Canal House for anyone who comes up to Nottingham.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Good food, good beers.
I don't recommend coming up on a Wednesday night to get beat 3-1, though.
No, it's a long way back to Manchester now, isn't it?
Yeah, a long old haul.
And I think we just got to a road closure on the way out, and the way out, which is a great planning from them. Anyway, stand or fall?
Up the Albion.
Okay, so thank you there to Alistair and friends for doing that audio at the game, the Forest match, which, Peter, you were at as well. Now, you probably heard from that that there was a gradual depression sinking as the audio went on in that particular sequence. I mean, full of hope, full of confidence that we might bounce back. But, of course, the 120 minutes, the general fatigue of the team, the stretched depth, due to certain injuries in certain areas. And I think somebody said online somewhere, I think it was Andy Naylor pointing out that it's not so much the magnitude of the number of injuries, but the fact that they're all in the same positions. We've got two right backs with injury problems at the same time, two attacking midfielders with injuries at the same time, and now attackers, obviously Welbeck and Ferguson. So that's kind of more why there was a bit of a stretch on resources. But in terms of the game, you were there. What's your take on it?
Firstly, to say, I think definitely can't claim injuries against Forest because they've got about 250,000 injuries, haven't they, or something like that, yeah. Roughly. I think they've got about 10. So they just have a lot. Exactly, they have a very big squad. I think we said in January we don't have the depth, and I can't understand for life of me why we've left these games. Some of these games we've rearranged so late. Doesn't apply to Forest, but Bournemouth and Palace. If they'd been rearranged earlier, we could have rearranged United and City earlier. We wouldn't have the fixture condition we've got now. So why, whether it's the other clubs involved or whether it's us, I don't know. But we've caused this ourselves partly by not strengthening in January and partly by leaving our rearranged games. Bournemouth and Palace were rearranged and were cancelled in September, and we didn't play them until late March and early April.
Why the hell's that not happened? I know we had the World Cup, and there's Champions League considerations and other considerations for our opponents. But surely,
if we sort one of those out, we could have played United in one of those 2 weeks, and we then would have a gap after Saturday of nine days to get our players back.
Apparently,
there's
four games in hand, apparently, and we've got three of them.
Yeah. Why Newcastle? We knew about. I mean, I don't. My dad and I were talking about earlier in a week. We don't know exactly who decides. So whether it's the home team decide or whether it's the agreement, but Newcastle we've known about since early February. I think they won the League Cup,
but and surely they could have
rearranged for earlier than that week before the last week.
Yeah, surely you have to say, look, I know you guys don't want to do this week or that week, but bear in mind when you get nearer to the end of the season, we can't fit them in reasonably because we're going to have the Man City one, which they couldn't do for a number of weeks. And whatever other games, you know, that it's just
seems like we've kind of screwed up whoever decided these things has screwed up, and we've been ended up with five games against, including four of the top six or four of the top five in the space of 15 days.
Well, this
game more specifically, I thought it was 10 poor minutes, followed by 50 generally pretty decent minutes, followed by 30 awful minutes. Probably my, first 10 minutes we were awful. We gave away a penalty, we gave them a couple of good chances as well, and we didn't look like we were completely with it. Then after the penalty was saved, we kind of woke up, and actually for the rest of the first half, we controlled the game completely. I mean, Forest didn't get near us really, except for the odd chance where they counter-attacked quickly. But other than that, we basically completely dominated. We should have scored when Navas saved. Well, we had other chances we should have done more with. And then obviously we did score from a goalkeeping error. Got 1-0 ahead, we're absolutely cruising. Would we get a second before half time, and then give the ball away poorly? But then, I mean, it's What I will say, it was a massive bit of luck that Forrest got with that first goal. I mean, it's, you know, it's going straight to steal that cross, and then it hits, you know, it hits Grosh, and it just completely...
Yeah, I was going to say with that, I totally agree with you. I think people have talked about the Spurs game with the outrageous decisions that would probably cost us, and they probably have. But almost as much as that, I reckon that moment may have turned our season. I'm now genuinely very worried about whether we're going to get over the line here, because the fixtures we've got are not easy. We do like playing those kind of teams, but to get results in those type of games...
Yeah, when you're playing so many of them not get with a small squad.
And we've got an intense schedule, and we've got already a stretched squad, and we may get some players back at certain points, but I'm getting very worried about that. And I do think that moment when, you know, he's on the angle, he's got no chance of scoring, he whacks it, it comes off Grosh, who's trying to block the cross, he gets the most innocuous connection, slight angle, diagonal angle, that just catches Steele just in the wrong position. Steele, of course, back in the team for this game.
He almost saves it, and it's so
ridiculous that went in, and that turned the game, because then 10 seconds before the end, they go into half time with a completely different team talk, and they can really...
And the crowd really rose. I thought the crowd didn't make a sound the first half. Second half, they were brilliant. I thought they backed their team. Yeah. Even then, 15 minutes second half, I thought we controlled it. Mittema had a really good chance at 1-1.
Yeah.
He takes that. Buonanotte arguably could have gone on, carried on in front of a shot. Either way, he sets up Mittema, who even though he mishit it, almost goes in, it almost creeps in, even though he mishit it. And then from there, we need to rest him for a game or something. I don't know where or what we do. In a way, him getting 10 bookings would have been a good thing for us. He'd have had two games out and he'd had a rest, because he just looks like he's finished at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, you said they'd make a sound in the first half. I mean, to be fair to them, they were pretty good. From what I could see on TV, they made a lot of noise. I mean, in the first half, what happened was we quietened them down. After they missed the penalty, or had the penalty saved, a good save from Steele, we did quieten them down, because we started to own the game, and we looked shit hot at that stage. And I said that on the WhatsApp group. I thought we were looking great. Then we got the goal, thought fantastic, and we continued to boss the game. We did quieten them down, but they were very noisy at the beginning. But what happened with that fluky goal just before half time is, of course, they're right up, and then they started well, and especially the early stages of that first half, and particularly in the middle part of the half. And that's where we lost the game. All of that was because of that bloody deflected goal. We did not have the luck, have we, really? But, you know, they were very good second half for us, both in terms of fans and players. I thought they really were up for it. And in the end, they deserved the win, 100%. As De Zerbi said, more graceful than Stellini, by the way, who thought that they still thought that Spurs deserved to beat Brighton, which is ridiculous. I saw him. I drove past him today, by the way, on the road, can you believe, in North London. And I wish I'd known I was going to pass him, because I had a few words to say about that. Anyway, sorry, Raymond, you were itching to get back in.
Funnily enough, I think the turning point was you mentioned the Spurs game, so I think it's very apropos, because I think our sort of momentum changed. I know we beat Chelsea after that, but I think the reality is that we had four, arguably five, really poor decisions, and that made a difference. I think it took a little bit of the stuffing out of things, because it was ridiculous that had two arguably perfectly good goals disallowed. We had two absolutely nailed on penalties not given.
I think we had three nailed on penalties personally. Anyway,
And so arguably five decisions, and it's just as if the sort of confidence was slightly knocked. And yes, we beat Chelsea, but they're all over the shop at the moment. And I mean, they're doing worse under Lampard than they were doing under Potter, which I'm sure Graham is probably quite pleased with. That they aren't, there's no shape or meaning in how they're playing. But I think it is that. And that deflected goal, as you say, from Grosh, is such an unusual angle to get a deflected goal in near post there. It's just one of the things. Did Steele move fractionally too soon to go and take the cross? I don't know.
I don't think so, because you've got to assume it's going to have a different kind of...
But nonetheless, on the other hand, we still had 75% possession. We still had 17 shots with seven on target, which is, up amongst the top clubs in Europe. Just a little bit of the accuracy, as I was referring to earlier with the Manchester United, just wasn't quite there. And McAllister, I'm always slightly happier when he's playing deeper rather than further forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not absolutely convinced that he is a number 10. I think he's a really fine player. Don't get me wrong. And I think some of his runs coming late are good. And but he missed two good opportunities in that first half. And just missed them. You know, they weren't sort of howling misses, sort of a la Bissouma or something. But they, nonetheless, whether he's just trying to be sort of too accurate, I don't know. And the one where he put it past the post, he didn't really have the power where he was set up early on. That should have been buried. You know, Mitoma's one that Peter referred to. I mean, I thought Buonanotte did absolutely the right thing. I mean, he had the defence. He opened up the space for Mitoma. And I think a fresh Mitoma would have sort of 4 weeks ago would have scored there. And I think that's the problem. And this comes back to the lack of depth. I mean, Sarmiento not being there to be able to have a wide player and rest Mitoma. You know, it's not being able to give Casido, take him off for the last 20 minutes of a game. All of that business. I think the emotional strain too, one mustn't underestimate the impact of that after being the better team on Sunday. I mean, that's, had we been outplayed on Sunday and it had gone to 120 minutes and we'd been knocked out, having hung on, you know, bravely for 120 minutes, I think the whole mental attitude approach to Wednesday's game would have been different. But because we were the dominant side and it didn't happen, I think that has a knock-on effect. Coming on top of all those bad refereeing decisions in the Spurs game, I think that is it. And I'm worried about Saturday, not because it's of the opposition, but purely whether it's too soon to have another game. Three games in 6 days, you know, that's arguably, you know, ridiculous. And it's actually, can Roberto lift them? Can he? You know, presumably they had Thursday off. I'm not sure I would have done much training today other than getting them in and saying, look, guys, great, you know, go for it tomorrow. I would have just let them sort of loosen up a bit, get the stiffness out. But perhaps we can see the real Brighton again. That extra sharpness, that extra intensity, come Thursday when we play Manchester United again and we have the opportunity, which I hope we would take, to actually put one over on them.
Yeah, just purely for the way the fans behave, like they don't want to do it apart from anything else, and the European qualification. I agree with you. I mean, what's worrying is that we've come into this intense period of games where we're now going to play two a week, looking like we're getting tired as we're going into it, which is a bit more than I was expecting, actually. I was expected to get tired during it, but it feels like we're getting tired running into it, which is a bit of a worry. I know that's partly due to certain people dropping out with injuries and people having to play longer games, but still a bit irritating, especially with United having played all that time on Thursday, the demoralisation of a bad result. Well, we were sitting back all week, relaxing and resting, and yet we looked just as leggy as they did, didn't we?
But well, I think, in fairness, United have the depth. So their second sub, I think, was Sancho. Yeah, and our second sub was Undav, and that's why they looked fresher as they went on, because they were able to bring on quite a few subs and still have a pretty strong team, whereas we didn't really have that option off the bench. And yeah, I actually said it, I think, on the pod on Sunday morning, I said I was actually more concerned after they got stuffed by Sevilla than I would have been. I really wanted them to go to extra time and win it and be happy and not have to, you know, and not, you know, getting stuffed almost the worst thing that could happen to us.
Yeah, I had a bad feeling about it when they had a bad game, because you can't think they're going to be that bad two games in a row. And they have tended to bounce back.
And it also meant that they almost went to the tactics they went for because they had a bad game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Also, they've got given the extra day before they played Spurs yesterday. So, you know, why couldn't have we been given the extra day? But anyway, that's water under the bridge. Can I just ask Peter one thing while he's here? I still think it was an error, and I think I maintained it at the time, and I'm maintaining it again now, that we didn't replace Trossard. When Trossard went, fine, understand all the reasons for selling him, etc. But we really needed to bring somebody else in then. And had we brought somebody else in to replace Trossard, we'd have that little bit more freshness and extra option up front. And I think it's come back to bite us not replacing Trossard.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I get the fact that they're a bit wary about January and value and that sort of thing. And I think I understand the reasons for that. But I think the fact that we didn't get extra defender in January, we didn't replace Trossard. And I'm not saying buying a 28-year-old Ukrainian for 25 million, which is completely outside our model. But even a couple of players on loan, even like that, we obviously are happy to have Colwell on loan. Why not bring a couple of players we can find them on loan? We lack a bit of depth. I think from my point of view, what you were just saying, I completely agree about McAllister. I think his position in World Cup has really cost us, because I think it felt like De Zerbi felt he's had to play him further forward. I think him and Grosch the other way around are much more effective. Grosch is a much better finisher in open play, significantly better. He's much more likely to take a chance like that in open play. McAllister, I think, is better deeper. But because he played further forward at the World Cup, they almost feel they have to play in there. And I don't agree with it. I think he should be playing alongside Casado. And Grosch, when they're both playing their position, should be playing further forward.
Yeah, well,
and it's quite frustrating that they seem to, because of the World Cup, seem to put McAllister further forward.
Yeah, it's a good point, Peter. I'm conscious of time. Sorry, go on, Raymond. Yeah, quickly.
Is that there are rumours today breaking, it's at on Sky Sports News as well, that we've apparently agreed a deal to happen in June to buy João Pedro. One of his names is Jesus, by the way, from Watford. He's not.
Can I just say, by the way, absolute just Andy, news. I've just seen Andy Naylor confirm it as well.
Yeah.
So it sounds like it's happening.
He doesn't confirm it unless he's playing at the top of the club. Yeah.
But it's actually, he's not really a striker. Having looked at his stats this season, he's played 12 times as a centre forward and scored one goal. He's actually played quite a lot of games as a secondary striker, a left winger or a left midfielder. He scored 8 goals from those other sort of 3 positions and only 1 goal as a centre forward. So really, looking at him, he's playing in the sort of positions more that Trossard played in. So if we could buy him in June, why couldn't we have bought him in January?
Well, maybe Watford won't.
I think Watford wanted him until they weren't going up, I think.
I've got a message from a Watford fan who said he is a very seriously, seriously good player. Pozzo's, who own Watford, didn't want to sell him. And they had the delusion, as he called it, of thinking they were going to come straight back up. And of course, that's not nowhere near as easy as they must have thought it was going to be. And I think, once it got to early spring, it was evident that they weren't going to make it in the playoffs or odds against. And that's now mathematically confirmed.
£30 million we're spending.
We're hearing about 7.5 as well.
There's somewhere about record £30 billion pounds.
Yeah, well, our record is Webster 20 mil. So, going to blitz.
See us buying a player for £30 million?
Yeah, exactly. No, let's take a moment to think about that.
It was 27.5 million plus add-ons, is the figure.
Nader's saying 30. So, I mean, either way, it's,
Yeah, and this is good news. And we do need attacking talent. We do need defensive talent. We do need to strengthen our team. We're hearing this might be a Roberto De Zerbi type of signing, more than specifically just the whole, developmental succession model that is generally in place. This might be more De Zerbi particular, this one. Whether that is or not the case, I don't know. But it sounds like a signing. He's Brazilian. He's 23, 21. I think.
21. He's not 22 until September. But he's actually, last season, of course, he was playing in the Premier League. He played 29 games, scored 3 goals, got an assist. He's 11 goals this season, 4 assists. And he played in the Championship the year before, got 9 goals. So,
He got 3 goals last season. How many did Solly March make goal score last season? And how many has he got this season? He is going to under De Zerbi. And what I saw a lot of Watford fans saying, like, it's a great move for him to be up play under De Zerbi as well.
Yeah. And you're playing with better players. You're going to be better, aren't you?
No, I mean, he's only 21. There's plenty of ability for him to improve, I would have thought. But he is what I'd call a wide attacker. So
yeah,
but he might end up playing like Trossard did up front if needed, as a third choice. So he might become the third choice for Nundab if we need someone. To be fair, he's 6 foot, isn't he, or like that? So he's got a bit of height on him as compared to say playing in Ciso or Buonalti up front.
And that was one of the things that I noticed in the game is I thought for all the sort of good play that we saw from. And Ciso, and I thought also Buonanotte in the first half, some good touches. And I liked what I saw from Buonanotte, you know, very early days. But he did the pass out to Marsh before Marsh shot for his goal, kept running, which I thought was good, Buonanotte. We seem to lack physical presence in their box. That was what I noticed.
Yeah. I think we changed that around to have a bit of pace behind them. That was the idea, I think. The kind of we accepted that we wouldn't have that, but we'd have a bit of pace in behind them.
And then Ciso has that dynamism, and he's very direct and getting very positive, getting shots off, and he's got a hell of a shot on him. And we should also mention
he had a really good effort against United.
Yeah, he did.
Well saved.
Yeah, and both him and Solly, if they caught their shot slightly differently, it's a different story. If Welbeck hadn't headed over, it's a different story. We should just quickly mention, Buonanotte did make his first start against Forest and then, of course, scored with a rebound shot as well. So congratulations to him. I'm delighted.
I still didn't see so in the Premier League as well. It was his first.
I'm delighted if João Pedro comes off, because I think that's a good signing. Apparently,
I think we're nailer confirming it. It's done, I think.
It's pre-agreed.
He never confirms anything until it's pretty much the club have said it's right.
A couple of other good bits of news as well. From the Irish side of things, Andrew Moran and Evan Ferguson have both signed new deals. I think Moran's to 2027 and Ferguson's to 2028. Ferguson, of course, signed an extended deal on his 18th birthday, taking him to 2026. This was done in October. But he's now signed another extension for basically 6 and a bit years. These deals all, of course, taking them to June of those years. Pretty good news as well, Rat, with that, isn't it?
Brilliant.
I would guess that on top of that, we would probably have our standard 1 year extension option as well.
Yeah.
And I have to say, Ferguson will only be 23 when he kind of that contract's over, which is crazy. I mean, yeah.
That's mad, isn't it? It's mad.
Yeah. He won't even be close to his peak in football terms at that point. I don't think he'll stay those 5 years, but even if he did, he wouldn't be even close to his peak.
It's mad, isn't it?
Right, the club are being very careful in trying to handle him and not try to rush him back at the moment.
Absolutely. Completely right thing to do.
Because it's somebody who is, you know, just got turned 18 and a half, his birthday was October, he's way ahead of where Kane was at the same age.
Yeah.
The last thing you want is to rush him back now to get points tomorrow, and then he gets an injury that keeps him out for 6 months, which is be a disaster.
It's testament to how well he's playing that we're saying we're missing him in games against Forest and in an FA Cup semi-final.
Yeah, I didn't really think it helped that I don't think Welbeck was that fully fit as well against either game. So if Welbeck had been fully fit, I think it had been better, but yeah.
Welbeck had chipped a bone and had some other injury. Sort of round ankle or something. And that may have counted for why he didn't quite rise high enough for that headed chance. And so I felt Welbeck was carrying a bit of an injury. I didn't think he was.
Yeah, I agree.
Quite industrious and everything else as he normally is, and running the lines quite to the same degree or the same pace. So you know, we are struggling. I mean, you know, we're obviously Veltman came on, who was not fully fit because he wasn't in the squad. I don't think for the Forest game development. So
he was on the bench, but yeah, the fact they didn't bring him on suggested he obviously wasn't fully fit.
Hmm. Yeah. What well, I mentioned earlier. Sorry, just to quickly mention earlier, I saw Stellini in the street when I was driving along the road. That was near Totteridge and Whetstone tube station. And he was with what two people. I've got a family vibe thing going on there.
Yeah, Craig, I didn't Pawson.
It might have been his... yeah, Pawson, yeah. No, it might have been his parents, I'm not sure.
Not Craig Pawson,
You're talking about the...
Stuart Atwell.
No, it wasn't. No, it was someone. I think it was probably relatives. It had that vibe about it. But interestingly, just one thing as well. Andy Bravery, friend of the show, said that in the last 30 days between them, Chelsea and Spurs have now had six managers and are looking for two more. One of which may be Pochettino at Chelsea, by the way. Agreed redundancy costs of at least 20 million, played nine games and won one of them. And that's down to VAR, that they won that one game. Stellini, of course, has been sacked since we were last talking after that 6-1 defeat. And that six manager thing obviously does include Bruno, which was for one game, which is a bit ridiculous. But
Unbeaten.
Yeah, exactly. But Lampard's now lost, what, five in a row?
And I think he's won one in 20 games he's managed, I think, now.
Yeah. And what for me, when they were talking about Pochettino, there's one guy being interviewed outside Stamford Bridge said, well, I'd rather keep Frank. What? Why? He's lost all of the games since he's come back. He was sacked.
Russell, I can answer that. It's very simple. With Frank, you know what you're going to get. So you don't go with any expectations. You know they're going to lose. Don't say you haven't got any false hope.
and also he used to manage Tottenham as well, which doesn't help.
And there was a banner saying Frank the new forever. What the hell does that mean, and why are they going down that line? He's a legend of the club as a player, fair enough. As a manager, he's not a legend.
He's a dreadful manager.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's an OK manager, but he's nowhere near a top six club manager thing, is it? Absolutely crazy. Peter, I know you've got to go, so should we let you... you're OK, you've got five more minutes. Very quickly then, a couple more things. Roberto De Zerbi, coming back on him. Richard Mills, who we've had on the podcast before, who writes for Sussex Live, he said that Brighton striker Dennis Undav has been told that he needs to show more self-belief as he has, to quote... big potential, according to Roberto De Zerbi. This morning, which was Tuesday at the time, he said, I spoke with Dennis Undav. You don't know Undav well, said De Zerbi. Undav has big potential. He's a very good player. I think he has to believe more in himself, first of all, because he has quality. He can play better and believe more in himself. To play in our level in the Premier League, you have to always think positively. I'm sorry for him because he deserves more from this season and suggests maybe opportunities. Anyway, he says, I like him. The other players like him, but he has to help himself more. So he's got to somehow break through psychologically.
Yeah. You can see how popular he is, though, from the way the players celebrated with him when he scored against Middlesbrough and against Grimsby as well. Everyone surrounded him, and also against Forest as well. They were quite annoyed, even though it clearly wasn't going to make a difference. We weren't going to draw the game from there.
Yeah, and he also scored two goals in that friendly out in Dubai against Villa. So perhaps we should play him against Villa because he might fancy his chances against Villa.
Yeah, I mean, it's a thing, isn't it? Players do score against certain teams as a habit. It does happen. So there is that. There was also something, I haven't got the quote here, but Roberto De Zerbi was talking in slightly Gus style terms a little bit this week. He was talking about we need to do as well as we can this season, and in the summer we need to know what our project's going to be, what our plans are going to be. It was that kind of vibes, which suggested that he was leaving it open to how are we going to do here, guys. Was he looking for worrying?
No, I think he just wants some investment. I think, to be fair. He's seen, obviously, Trossard go in January and not be replaced, and Mwepu go while he's at the club, and I think, to be fair to him, he just wants to see... He's not Gus. He's not going to throw his toys out of the pram. He just wants to kind of have confirmation. Hopefully, Al Pedro coming in will be that, and... Yeah, hopefully that'll be the...
I think, Peter, absolutely right. It's important that the club support him. It really is. And it's important that we... If we want to have more ambition, you know, not just be a top 10 club, but sort of trying to get into Europe and that sort of thing, we've got to have more depth in the squad. And whilst I think our identification of young players is good and we should continue that, so because people like Bonanotte, Enciso, Ferguson, they don't have to be in the name 25 I mean, all of those players are under 21 and are going to be for another couple of years. So,
and on smaller wages, hopefully, at this stage.
But, yeah. I don't think we want a squad bigger than 25 anyway, but 25 is fine with two per position and that sort of thing. That's okay with a couple of threes. But we don't have 20. That even at the moment.
I mean, but with the Ferguson's and everything, we've only got about 21, 22. That's the reality. And that's
included. Yeah, exactly. So
they have to be named in it. What you want is about 28 with the Ferguson's and the Buonanottes and people as on top of that. And
I think 28 almost too much, to be honest. It's like, because then you start looking at players not getting a look in. What you want is 25 who he trusts. So, for example, Gilmore's a bit of a waste because he doesn't seem to trust him. That's the problem as well. There are players in that 20, 21, 22, he won't play. Like Gilmore, he clearly won't want to play.
But in terms of passing accuracy, I can't remember. It was over anybody who's played more than a certain number of minutes, which Gilmore had qualified for. I mean, Gilmore is about a second off, about second in passing accuracy in the squad.
Whether he is or not, doesn't seem to bother De Zerbi. He doesn't trust him, clearly. Yeah. He's not played him in the last two games when we've desperately needed some injection.
No, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, all the telltale signs are that he doesn't really trust or doesn't fully believe yet in Undav and Gilmore.
Yeah, and that's where we've really struggled, I think, the last few games, because the key area where we've been good in all season has been down the flanks in midfield, and McAllister, Casado, Stupinian, Mitoma and March have all looked a bit knackered at times, and all five of them have been crucial to our run under De Zerbi. And they've all kind of struggled a bit.
Yeah, I do.
I mean, you were saying obvious. I mean, Lamptey, I love him when he's on the thing and he's fit and he's running at defences. But we've missed the ability to bring Lamptey on in the last few games against Spurs. Yeah. I mean, all sorts of people. And to actually have him running at the defence to create...
He doesn't do any more anyway.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
But, you know, we couldn't bring him on for extra time. In that cup, you know, in the cup semi-final, that might have made a huge difference. March wasn't getting much change out of their defence, so moving March into a different position, perhaps resting Estupinan for a bit, bringing Lamptey on the right, you know, might have helped. But I'm not sure that I sort of feel I can trust Lamptey to be fit enough.
Exactly. I think one of our big signings this summer will be an equivalent right back, basically, to Estupinian.
Well, I think
someone of that quality would really improve our game and give us more pace as well at the back.
Yeah, I think we arguably need two fullbacks. I've seen talk that Beltman his contract might be extended.
We need backup at left back as well.
Yeah, and also Cole Wall leads as well.
Yeah. I mean, Cole's going. Isn't it? So we need to replace Cobol.
Yeah, and I think the big thing is going to be Casado, Joe. We need to replace him. That's going to be the biggest one.
Well, listen, guys, we could talk about this for ages.
I've got like a few minutes. Can I just do the roundup of the leagues and then?
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
So obviously, league championship, we're going to play in Burnley and Sheffield United next season. But it's quite interesting to play. Also, Luton and Middlesbrough are in there. But then it's any two of technically about eight teams in there who could get the last two playoff places. Although probably two of like about four of them probably, but yeah, it'd be quite an interesting one. I'm not sure either.
I think it could well be between some Middlesbrough and Luton.
I'd have bet on Coventry to go up when they're in the relegation zone with loads of games in hand in August September time.
They've had an amazing run. Fair play to them for sticking with Mark Robbins after a dreadful start, and fair play to him for turning it around, because I mean they've had an amazing last year. They were bottom after about 10 games, did actually get rid of manager and brought Cooper in and turned it around that situation and won promotion, and Coventry could do the same. I really hope Reading go down. That would be nice. Bottom of League One. Blackpool and Wigan, I think, probably are gone, even though they're not that far adrift point wise. I really hope Reading get the last place because I don't really like Reading. And I hope Liverpool don't go up as well.
Given what a good season Gyökeres has had.
Plus goals now.
Yeah, and plus a whole lot of assists. Don't forget the assists that he's got. But it doesn't say much for Graham Potter's judgment about forwards.
I disagree with that. He scored like about two goals at Coventry the previous season. And I mean, Akpom scored a lot of goals at that level as well, in fairness, this season. And he was terrible for us.
Really hard to tell, isn't it?
You know, the more we improve, the more players will go away from us and be released and do well. It's a fact, you know.
Peter, can I just say, I'm so gutted that Massive look like they're going to miss out.
Yeah, so this is not my next thing. Hopefully Plymouth and Ipswich will finally sort of...
I like those clubs anyway. Come on, Plymouth, come on.
And Massive will miss out. And then, there are some big clubs in the playoffs. Well, Wednesday, Barnsley, Bolton and Derby are currently in the top six.
Barnsley have done brilliantly.
All four of those have been in the Premier League at one point or another one.
Barnsley have done brilliantly. I think they just want to go up.
Bottom of League One, Forest Green are already down. But then Cambridge, Accrington, Morecambe, Oxford, MK Dons could all go down still. So then League Two, we're looking at Orient already up. Northampton, Stevenage, technically Stockport, Carlisle, Bradford could all still go up. So it's going to be a bit tight, but it could also be decided tomorrow. The bottom, Rochdale and Hartlepool are down, in effect. Top of the National League, it's a bit boring. There's only one game left. Wrexham are up. It's technically Woking could get third and be out in the playoffs later on, but not probably won't. Probably not Scottish Chesterfield. Probably Boreham Wood will get the final playoff place. Probably Torquay will get the final relegation place. National League North is, but I don't know if anyone's seen the table for that.
Yeah.
Fylde have got a win tomorrow to go up. Kingsland could overtake them if they don't. Then Chester have got nothing to play for. And then Brackley in fourth are only four points to go Darlington in 13th. So any of those clubs could get in the playoffs. Obviously, Darlington can't overtake Brackley and Alfreton. But even Brackley and Alfreton could actually drop out of the playoffs if they lost tomorrow.
Wow.
And they're fourth and fifth. So, and they're playing each other. So one of them could easily drop out of the playoffs.
Yeah. So also, can we mention quickly South Shields, who are in the same boat as Worthing for two or three years with the whole COVID and the curtailments and everything, and they finally got promoted. They went professional about
it. And have sacked Kevin Phillips, or he's left them for whatever reason.
He's left because he's done a brilliant job there.
And Julio Arca's taken over.
Julio Arca, another former Sunderland player. Yeah, former player. But Kevin Phillips did a brilliant job, and they've gone into the National League North. And they, congratulations to them, because they've had a real tough time of it getting into that division. They're well overdue on that.
Yeah.
But the National League South?
Bottom of that, Blythe Spartans could actually stay up. We were fourth bottom. They've got a winnable home game against Hereford tomorrow, and Kettering have got a tough away game. And so if Blythe Spartans win and Kettering don't, then they're Kettering are down. And then finally, obviously FC up in the National League South. Shout out to Worthing. Hope they, and also Barnet as well, who obviously I have a soft spot for in the National League, have done really well.
But a little bit of a
sad note. Concord Rangers, well done to them. They got so close last night. They were ahead against Avant twice and could have gone on to being a real chance of staying up. Given the month they've had, they've done amazingly to get themselves only 4 points from safety. So fair play to them. That's a 11, hell of an achievement. They played 9 games this month after this weekend. Yeah. And they give it a real go.
Peter, by the way, did you hear there was a team that had to play 11 games in 10 days?
Yeah, further down, wasn't they? Yeah.
Anyway, but that Concord stuff was difficult enough. Yeah, unlucky to them. Good effort. Worthing in the playoffs.
It's just a matter
of where they go now. They beat Chesant comfortably away in midweek, which means that they've gone up either one or two places. And
they're fifth currently, yeah.
Yeah, so they now, if they win their last game of the season, I think I'm right in saying they will get a home tie in the Illuminator.
They're home to Hemel. If they win, they could move up to fourth, and then they play the seventh place team. If they draw, Braintree would have to win by 7 goals to overtake them. So they would almost certainly have a home game against Braintree or St Albans.
Yeah.
If they lose, then Braintree and St Albans could both overtake them and they could end up 7th, which would mean an away game at Oxford City or Chelmsford. So it could be anything. A draw would almost certainly mean they'd get home for a home quarterfinal.
Dartford in the equation as well. So we could be playing away to Dartford or Oxford.
No. In the semi-final. If they're away to Dartford and semi, I might be tempted to go because it's like literally down the line from me.
Come on, Peter. By the way.
Another talking of managers who are doing a good job. Adam Hinchcliffe has done a brilliant job there.
Fantastic.
I mean, as much as I wanted to stay at Worthing, it can't be that long before he probably gets people start looking him higher up.
Unless he keeps going up and up and up.
Yeah, it's too early. I think it's probably too soon for Worthing to go up to the National League. I mean, I'm not saying they obviously will give it a go, and you never know. Dorking did it last season and stayed. It looked they're going to stay up, so who knows? Yeah. But I think it probably, if you look at Maidstone, how good they were last season and how bad they've been this season. Also, final random note before I shut up. Is Maidstone on 25 points and Wrexham on 110 the biggest difference between bottom and top ever of a league?
I would say yes. I would have to look at Reading's championship season as the only.
No, they got 106. So, but I don't think the bottom team could have had that lower amount, could they?
We have to wait until we see what happens with financial fair play and Manchester City. But when they finish top of the league and think they've won it, they then get a sort of 90-point or 100-point deduction.
And find we qualify for Europe in eighth place.
Which I think would be, you know, first prize to see that the so-called champions have been relegated for financial fair play irregularity because they've had a 100-point deduction. And that would really cost them.
That would really cost them, yeah. I think it's safe to say a 100-point deduction would cost them.
Well, the point is that Haaland and De Bruyne and everybody would actually leave because they wouldn't want to be playing in the championship.
Do you not think Haaland wants to go to Rotherham on a Tuesday night in January?
Yeah. And also, I mean, there'd be two seasons where they could not be in the Champions League.
They wouldn't go. This won't happen, though. They're not breaking the rules now. They might get taken away. They might get fined heavily, but they're not going to get relegated now for things they committed like 6-7 years ago.
We're descending into Raymondisms here. We've got to be careful. This could go on forever.
But I think the point is that...
And I actually do have to go now.
But there's no point finding them because... All they do is sell a couple more bags.
There isn't a point, but they will. They won't. They're not going to like relegate Man City, realistically. Yeah.
Well, listen, guys, we've got to wrap it up there. It's been a fantastic episode. Peter's got to go. Raymond, thank you for joining us, sir. It's been a pleasure, sir.
Fine, a pleasure. But anyway, I'm sure one can rant on financial fair play to one's heart's content.
We could do a summer series on that one, couldn't we? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, Raymond, thank you for joining us, and Peter. Stand or fall?
Up the Albion.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.